again, just those three principles of mine, just to treat people with kindness, respect and professionalism. And I think that'll be the one thing that I'll continue to work on. I don't always get it right. And surround yourself with people that will lift you up, not pull you down. And the ones that are pulling you down, don't listen to them. Just be mindful of that. Listen to people that are going to push you in the right direction, which is up, not down.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry Sales Professionals, Property Managers and Leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast, containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Joining me today is Fletcher's real estate director and auctioneer, Tim Heaviside, who's been among our many Melbourne colleagues navigating an incredibly tough year in real estate. He's an 18-year veteran of the industry. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi, Samantha. It's a delight to be here on the show and join everyone today.
Yeah, I know. I think this is the first interview that I've done since it was announced that you guys could actually leave the house, which is amazing. How does it feel?
Well, I went and had lunch yesterday at a cafe and without a mask and ate in the actual cafe, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, amazing. I do remember my first dinner when we got out of lockdown in Sydney. Everything tasted so good. It was so weird, but it was so good. And I take it you avoided Kmart. Because in Melbourne, I just saw the crowds in Kmart.
24-hour Kmart. And, you know, once you got over midnight, they were rolling in the doors. It was amazing. And I believe Chadstone and those sorts of things, retailers, been booming. So good on them.
So let's talk 2020, Tim, because as a director and an auctioneer for an agency in Melbourne, you've been right in the thick of all the lockdowns and all the rest of it. What has it been like on the ground in Melbourne this year?
Yeah, I'm a sales director, so I'm an owner of the business. And just to give people a little snapshot, Fletchers have been around for about 101 years. So we've got 22 offices. We're certainly well entrenched in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, but some of our franchise offices go further deeper, but we're predominantly eastbound in Melbourne. And I'm predominantly just in sales, although I also wear a director's hat and a leadership hat and sometimes a spokesperson amongst the community and amongst the actual team at Fletcher's and do a bit of training, that type of thing. So today's, you know, not too uncommon for me and I feel very comfortable in this environment, but my main role is to list and sell real estate. So during the year 2020, we started off booming in Melbourne. Real estate was certainly on the rise. Prices were accelerating. COVID hit for us, which is around March. From there, we went into a different phase of real estate. So I noticed that new things started to come in, new ways of transacting, new ways of communicating. But overall, it's still just the same. You are still listing and selling properties. So sometimes you just got to adapt and get on with it.
So what were some of the early strategies that you guys put in place? Because you've got more than 240 staff, I think, around East Melbourne and surrounds. So what were some of the early strategies that you put into place to deal with it?
Melbourne's East.
Yeah.
So not East Melbourne. We're not in East Melbourne. We're in like Camberwell, Surry Hills, Canterbury. They're my core areas. And, you know, what I've noticed at the first part of the lockdown in terms of an agent and auctioneer, that we really started to go on to online auctions. So we predominantly didn't do too much in-house auctions here in Melbourne, certainly not at Fletcher's. And so we had to adapt into that. So the first part was around that March, April, May, that type of time frame. And what I noticed was I converted all my live auctions out on the street onto online auctions. We went with the platform Google Hangouts. We used Real-Time Agent, you know, in terms of the contracts and stuff like that. BidTracker, that's our technology platforms. And so the technology was okay. I had 15 auctions to start off with in terms of performing, and I sold 15 out of 15. And out on surface, that sounds like amazing and heroic and gee, it was unbelievable. But the truth was we worked really, really hard during that period of time to sell 10 out of 15 prior to auction. Five that I actually physically called, none of them sold under the hammer. Three of them passed in where nobody bid. and we sold to people that were actually tuned into the auction online, and then we were able to negotiate afterwards. And two were sold to people that actually bid, but we didn't get any other bidders, just the one, and then we went on to negotiate and sell them. So it was really tough for us. So we were just learning the technology, learning the different ways of how to communicate with buyers and bidders and registering them on all that type of thing. And then, yeah, we were just dealing with the vendors and dealing with, you know, the actual technology side of things. And we just had the one camera, and it was a bit like analog, if you like. And so when the second lockdown came into the world, so we come out of it around that June, July period where we were able to call live auctions again. And then we went back down into online world. What I noticed was that our systems that we improved, the buyers felt more comfortable and the activity accelerated. So we had two or three screens, we had the bids on the screen, we coached all the buyers on the different ways and strategies to bid and made it really easy for them, changed the technology a little bit to adapt to different styles. And so we just didn't just do Google Hangout, we do Zooms as well. And, you know, for the buyers, they also were accustomed, well, if we're going to buy, this is the way that everyone's transacting, or most people. So that was one thing that was a bit of a change. The other was I picked up different ideas in terms of how the method of sale can be transacted, in that we found there was five ways that you could sell a property, either by a private sale treaty, either expressions of interest, an auction, live auction, an online auction, or there's open negotiation. And I'm sure you've heard of open negotiation, the WA system. And so I picked up that because it was perfect for COVID. So we went through all the training. I've done a number of sales through that way as well. So I was able to have that flexibility for the client and the situation.
It's interesting because I've heard a lot of agents throughout the last 12 months, they have developed, like what you were just rattling off there, was a bit of a menu of services depending on what the person's situation is and what you feel will get the best price for the property. So it's really interesting that over the year it's evolved like that.
Yeah, that's right. So true. So we've just got on with it. That's the most important thing.
So what about, you know, because we did see a real dip in auctions in Melbourne. In fact, I think one weekend it kind of got to zero. What were some of the conversations that you were having with people that wanted to sell during that period of time?
That was tricky. We still had motivated vendors that did want to sell. The interesting thing in terms of how the market has gone in 2020, it's been very stable. The prices haven't really fluctuated too much. When COVID first came into place, you might argue, look, the market might have gone down maybe 2%, maybe 3% down. But since then, it's been very stable. And right now, as I talk to you, it's late October 2020. And I reckon, if anything, the prices are just slightly going up again. So it's very interesting. How are we dealing with vendors? So the vendors that were reluctant to put their property on the market based on what was happening were not putting their home on the market. And some people that really just wanted to sell were doing that. The interesting thing, once we've come out of this 8-week lockdown, or probably it's a bit longer than that, maybe 10 weeks or so for real estate agents anyway, and so we've got the ability now to do online auctions again, where we've got the ability to call auctions in the property,
yeah,
with a limitation, and we're allowed to do private inspections. What I've noticed is then there's been a surge of new listings and there's been a surge for Melburnians to leave Melbourne.
That's really interesting, actually, because we saw that last weekend. There's more properties now for sale in Melbourne than there is in Sydney. And in Sydney, we've seen quite a migration from the inner CBD where we are to the regional areas. Is that, number one, are you expecting to be busy now between now and Christmas? And is the same sort of thing happening in Victoria?
Yeah, the KPIs that I tend to really hone in on as an agent is the number of listings that I do in a month, the number of sales that I do in a month, and the amount of commission GCI that I write in the month. So they're the three KPIs that I look at on a consistent basis. And so I might list, on average, no matter what month it is, somewhere between 8 to 10 listings in a month. That would be average, normal for me. And my record is 26 listings in the month. And sometimes I've listed none in the month. You know, we're all human, but that's pretty rare. I think I did do a no listing during the lockdown, one of the months. So the fact is that at the moment, for this month of October, listed 19, and we're not done. So it'll be a big month of listings. And you know, I just keep looking at those stats that people are really, are genuinely wanting to leave Melbourne for a purpose now. So it's very interesting to see what's going to happen in this next period of time, because it's only in my world that I'm seeing people are wanting to move to Queensland, or they're wanting to, I've got someone moving to the country, like country New South Wales or Adelaide or WA, for various reasons. I think some of them have just had a guffle.
Yeah. And that's really understandable. And as I said, we're seeing it here and everywhere, low vacancy rates for people just sort of upping stumps and wanting to go and rent somewhere, because now we've realised that we can work from home and do all that sort of stuff, yeah. But despite all the issues with lockdown, like I stalked you a bit online before this interview, you've received some pretty amazing reviews for sales that you've achieved during lockdown. So what were some of the skills you feel like that other agents can learn from if in any sort of tough time to get something across the line?
Yeah, I've sold 63 properties during the COVID individually with my team, who are amazing. And, you know, some of it has been just out of grit and determination to get the job done for the owner. So being pretty resourceful and recognising the opportunity to close. So to give you a little example, I had a property in Box Hill that I was struggling to sell. It was an apartment. It wasn't an overly nice looking apartment. It was stuck in the middle of other properties and didn't have an oven, didn't have a laundry. Yeah, it was pretty tiny and no one really wanted to really buy it. So we did an online auction. I did an auction then when we were out of the lockdown, and, you know, I had the listing for a long time. We eventually sold the property, and we sold it during the lockdown to an investor who really saw very good value on it because it was priced right. So I just kept chipping away with my vendor to get the home priced right, and eventually we found the right investor that didn't really care about the oven, because we had a, well, I kept selling to the buyers, look, there's a conventional oven that's a microwave. and you know, they didn't really mind that it didn't have a dishwasher. I said, well, these can be your dishwasher here. That's your dishwasher. And so we got the job done. And the owner was hoping, I think, for the price point, they're hoping for around that $395, $390. I think we sold it for $380. And, you know, there was a little bit of, I guess, for the vendor to concede a little bit on the price, but just wasn't there. And we got it done to the right buyer and found the right buyer and was able to recognise that and get the deal done.
It seems like, you know, this has sort of recalibrated a lot of effort scales, let's just say, in terms of people often sort of throw out the line, there's no traffic on the extra mile. But the extra mile for you guys during the last 10 weeks has been a very different extra mile to what the extra mile normally is.
Yeah. Another example I had was a property that we listed after we did a lot of work to the property. And then eventually the lockdown was approaching. And so what happened, we got it on the internet, and that was on the Friday. We did inspections on the Saturday, none on the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and the Wednesday was the lockdown. And that was enough for us to do an online auction. We had enough interest and were able to sell it during the lockdown. So I think what's happened, Samantha, is that each individual vendor, each individual buyer, each individual property had its own little story to say. So I guess I could go through every single sale and tell you what happened, but it was circumstance for that time frame, what was happening in the COVID. And you know what I found as well pretty interesting is that, and I was only saying this to Mel, who I work with, I think COVID's brought out the best and the worst of people. And we've seen some people react differently. And so the ones that have got a little bit more tolerance, or someone that's got a little bit more willingness and openness to be able to do things and not so cynical, are getting their home sold.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it has brought out the best in a lot of people and some resourcefulness in a lot of people too. So I guess that the question is, are there any of the lessons that have come out of this period that you hope will endure past lockdown and into the new year? Anything that your teams have learned to do that you hope that they'll hang on to?
Oh, there's lots of learnings through this period of time. And I wouldn't say it was all the worst of times either. I mean, you've got to look at the silver lining in some of this. I mean, during the lockdown, I had some wonderful times with my wife and two children that I wouldn't have probably been able to experience if I was out there working. So in some respects, I looked at it as a bit of long service leave that was well and truly due. So I had a bit of a rest and a bit of a break. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
I certainly cooked a lot and ate a lot and drank too much wine and walk the dog too much. His poor legs are probably just about falling off. but you know, it was a pleasant period for us. To answer your question about what are the learnings, what are the things that we can take forward, I think some of the actual working from home within my team structure can probably continue in the future in some capacity. We don't need to be in the office all of the time. I think that's an obvious one. And so where you're going to have offices and as a business and how many offices that you need, I don't think necessarily have to be a high agenda. Also, it's taught us different ways that we can do options now, plus provide the opportunity for those that are feeling comfortable or for a reason to be able to bid online. So we're using and adopting a hybrid model and a system now. I think the online auctions, working from home, the ability to be able to have these different methods of sale, and we're not out of it. We're not free of it. We don't have the vaccine now. We don't know what 2021 is going to be like. People are just thinking, oh, if I could just get to Christmas and it'll all be sweet after that. There is no deadline with this yet. So we could have a third wave in Melbourne. I don't know. I don't want it to be. But if there is, I'm completely prepared for it. Our team is completely prepared. We haven't got our heads in the sand just thinking about rainbows and lollipops. We're being very real about it, Samantha. And I think that those that are listening and have actually got plans in place and the resources that you can tackle real estate into the future are going to be the winners, because we're not just like snap our fingers and done. And yeah, we've got our numbers down, and Australia could be like a little island where, you know, we don't let anyone in because we've got the numbers down. I would love for that to be the case, but I don't know.
I think until we have a vaccine, and I think at last count I read the news this morning, there's like 44 different trials going on. I think you're right. Until one of them is safe, it's hard to predict what's going to happen. So, yeah, interesting times. Let's take a bit of a walk through history. You know, now that we've talked about COVID and stuff like that, you've been in the industry for 18 years and the majority of that with Fletcher's. So what drew you into real estate? Did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
So I was born in country Victoria, moved to Melbourne when I was 21, didn't know a soul, met my wife, got married, had two children. I was a travel agent for 10 years and I left the travel industry to be a real estate agent because Ansett went down, the airline.
Yeah.
And so it's nearly 19. So come in December, I'll be in the industry for 19 years. So it's nearly two decades. And I was pretty decent salesperson as a travel agent. And I thought the travel industry can only take me so much in terms of financial income. And I just thought real estate was an avenue where I could earn better money than what I was in the travel industry. Not that I didn't love the travel industry. It was awesome. So I got into it from the airline going down, and I started off with a company in the east, and unfortunately they then folded within 3 months of me being there. So I got another job with another company, QuickSmart, and I was there for about, 9 months or so, and then I got a phone call from Fletcher's asking me to come in and have a little chat with them. And that was literally 18 years ago. And so I've been with the company now for 18 years, and they've been very good to me. I've certainly had goals that I wanted to be the best agent, the number one agent at Fletcher's. Then I wanted to have a goal of writing $1 million in GCI. And then I had other goals in terms of industry goals. And so I guess things have evolved over time. And, you know, you start off on your own and you pluck out to get a part-time assistant. And then you need a full-time assistant. And then you need two assistants. And then you develop a team. And you become, in some respects, a little office within an office.
Yeah, amazing. And what appealed to you about becoming an auctioneer? At what point did you say, this is for me?
I always had an aspiration to be an auctioneer, but I guess I had a bit of a fear factor around it. With respect to auctioneering, I started in 2007. I had an ambition to be an auctioneer, but I kept putting up all these roadblocks in front of me, Samantha. So I was saying, like, so if I become the number one agent within Fletcher's, then I'll become an auctioneer. And then I thought, you know, if I get my full license, you know, because I get some tricky questions asked to me, then once I got my full license, then I'll be prepared to be an auctioneer. So I got that. I just kept running out of excuses. So I started and I was terrible. Honestly, it was just shocking. The first auction I ever did, I entered and did the REIV auctioneer competition, the novice, and I won my division and I got to the semi-finals and bombed out to this gun commercial auctioneer. It was terrific. And then after that, I called an auction for the first time And I had Rob Fletcher there, his brother Tim, half the team at Fletcher's, and my family. I had potential vendors, current vendors. It was a massive crowd, and I was awful. I was atrocious. I passed it in, negotiated and sold it, but it was just dreadful. The two things about that was, one, I've got it on video at some point, you know, one of those old cassette things. So I've taped it. I've never watched it. And the second thing is, there was this Chinese lady. It was a potential vendor of mine. Her name's Betty. Betty came to the auction, and I had a listing presentation with Betty after the Saturday on the Monday to list her property on Belmore Road. So I went there, knocked on the door, and Betty answered, and she said, "Oh, come in, Tim, come in, come in." And we're walking down the hallway, and she stopped me and she said, "Now, Tim, we want to list with you, but we changed our mind. We don't want auction. We want private sale." And I was like, I was gutted.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went and, of course, I listed it and sold Betty private sale. And then about, I think it was about 3 or 4 years later, and I put a lot of effort into training and mentoring and effort, and I just really threw myself into auctioneering, and then I got a lot better. I don't say I'm the best auctioneer ever in the whole world. I'm not. And but Betty came to one of my auctions. It was in, I think it was in Loddon Street, Box Hill North, and it sold for a couple of hundred over reserve. And it was a pretty good auction. And Betty was at the auction and she said, "You're a good auctioneer. I want you to come around next week and list my house. And this time I want you to do auction." And it was on Elgar Road, and I auctioned her home, and I felt like, you know, the complete person. So it's interesting. But I tell you what, Samantha, auctioneering is not for everyone. But I'm so blessed that I actually am a half-decent auctioneer, because, you know, it provides a wonderful avenue to build profile as a listing tool. I use it all the time to list properties. And I've adapted things recently where I have been doing filming auctions, editing them, posting them out on social media. But the main reason I do it for is for potential vendors. And it's up to date. It's real, not, you know, 4 or 5 or 10 years old. It's just now. It's just been done. It does require an investment of money to do it professionally. And it comes up great. And I get a little testimonial from the client. The client likes it. The purchaser loves it. And potential vendors really find it very useful in their selection process.
If there was somebody sitting here, like listening to that, thinking, you know, like I really need to lift my game and do some more auctioneering or even get into auctioneering, what are some of the tips that you'd give them? Like, how did you practice in the early days?
Yeah, I think having a great auctioneer coach. I've still got an auctioneer coach, Phil DeFagley. I mean, he's probably everyone's auctioneer coach.
I've heard some agents use decks of cards and things like that to practice adding up and stuff like that. Are they some of the things you did?
Yeah, auction comps are fantastic for that. We just had a colleague, Stephen Zervis, just compete in the senior competition this year. Good on him. I just think it's wonderful. Anything outside your comfort zone like that is brilliant. It's just great for your own human development. So having an auctioneer coach, many, many years ago, Justin Long won the senior auctioneer competition. I reached out to Longy and I asked him whether or not he'd be interested in having a chat to me. And he said, "Look, I'm not a coach, but I tell you, my coach is wonderful." And that was Phil DeFagley. And so that's how I got the introduction to Phil. That's been a long time now, that relationship. And he's still today, like, I still ring him all the time. We meet all the time, and it's a professional conversation. It's not, "G'day, how are you, mate?" Not that we're not friends, but it's a paid coaching thing that I do with Phil, and he's brilliant.
So you said that your first auction was a disaster. A lot of people who, you know, let's just say you went out in front of a huge crowd and it wasn't great. How do you get over that mental hurdle of getting back on the horse again, so to speak? How did you move past that?
I think, you know, mental resilience is one thing in our industry. You do get knocked around a fair bit mentally. It could be terrible losing that listing that you've been working so hard for a long time or fought so hard. You just want that listing, you don't get it. Or you've really been prepared to actually have a successful auction campaign, and the buyers have let you down, or the vendors let you down, or you've let yourself down. Whatever's happened, or your team's let you down, and it's been able to rebound from that. But the whole universe, they're humans. We're not perfect. So you've got to give yourself a little bit of slack, cut yourself a little bit of slack, continue to look for a better improvement. I just think that how my mentality is around this is that I treat people, so vendors, purchasers, people I meet, I have the goal to treat people with kindness, respect, and professionalism. if I'm in a working environment. And that's always looked after me for a long period of time. But also myself, I respect myself. I'm kind to myself. I'm professional with myself. You've got actually, there's a thing called selfish sacredness. So to yourself, you need to be selfish. Otherwise, what will happen is that you let other people or other situations take over your state of mind, and your mind can drift very, the person on your shoulder can be very negative at times, but you do need to have that belief structure. Belief is one of the main core values that I have in my practice. Is one of the huge foundations for me is belief.
Well, I think, you know, like on the whole, like I read somewhere that, and I think it's true that the way we talk to ourselves is so much worse than we would talk to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you know, you could say, oh, that was a bad listing presentation, I was rubbish. But if you happen to be with a younger colleague and they were saying, you know, what do you think, you would never say that to someone else, the things that we say to ourselves. So I...
Yeah, you've got to hang around with people and listen to people that are going to help and guide you. Many years ago, I went on a conference with our CEO, Bradley Brown. We went to Fiji, and I was in the conference in a room, and I was paired up with Fiona Blaney. Do you know Fiona?
I do know Fiona, yep.
She's a gun. And I said to her, you know, I think it was July in the conference, and she said, how are you going? I said, oh, you know, July. I was just bad feeling. Every July, I've got to start from zero again the financial year. You climb the mountain in terms of being a reasonably successful salesperson, you might have wrote $1 million or $1.5 million or $2 million or whatever the number is. You start at zero in July. July 1, you're at zero. And I always wonder whether or not I'm going to get found out. Maybe I'm not this good. Maybe, you know, I was fluking it all this time. And, you know, Fiona's just sort of said to me, well, that's just a lot of rubbish. You've been consistently doing the numbers for a long period of time. You're about to do it all over again. I don't know why. You know, you got to have that believe and receive mentality. And I guess that was a little moment for me, if you like. But just having that belief structure in yourself is massive. You know, and I read this recently where some people got in a concentration camp, and they were in a concentration camp for a long time, Samantha. And the people that died the first were overly optimistic. So I think you have to have a healthy level of belief structure in yourself, not an egotistical belief structure in yourself, but a well-grounded belief structure in yourself. Because I've met many, many, many salespeople that come and go and they say, oh, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, gonna. But you know what really matters is the doing bit, not the saying bit. You can believe it, but you have to also be accountable to produce, to perform, to act, to take the knocks and to get back up again and be resilient and have the belief structure that you're going to do it. So I just feel like, you know, sometimes in our world, so the people that did survive the concentration camp, incidentally, for those that are thinking, well, what happened, they're the ones that had a balanced outlook that they knew that they would get rescued one day, but it may not be today.
Yeah, interesting. Speaking of listing presentations, I imagine over 18 years you've done quite a few of them, both in and out of lockdown. And I think at the moment that's probably a great tip if I could ask you for other agents. What are some of your best listing presentation tips to get people over the line, particularly this year?
Setting up the listing presentation is very important. So I tend to, once I've connected to an appraisal, by sending them a little text message, reconfirming the appointment and sending my contact to them. So it shows you're on the ball. A lot of agents won't do it. And so you're ahead before you even meet them. So you ask some pretty good questions, ask about their motivation, who you're going to be meeting, the decision makers, try and set it up properly. And I've had some disappointments in terms of listing presentations where I'm not actually dealing with the decision maker. So I'd really work hard to try and get to the decision maker, or steps that where you can eventually get to the decision maker. That's quite important. I ask a lot of questions about their situation, what's their situation, what's their motivation, what's happened in the past, have you sold before, how's that experience been, why did you buy the home, when you bought the home, have you done any improvements to the home, oh gosh, wow, look what you've done, that looks fantastic, stroking the gee, look at that deck, that's unbelievable. And then bringing that back into the listing presentation and just reinforcing what we want to do, Samantha, with your home, is able to provide outstanding marketing. So when buyers will come in. And the reason why you bought the home in the first place was because of the view and the fact that you've actually been able to build that deck. That's only going to reinforce to the buyers, and I'm going to be the agent that's going to bring the buyer out onto the deck and just show them that. And I think if you can, you know, visualize, I'm very visual in the listing presentation. I draw a lot, I write a lot. I'm childlike. I like to tell jokes, jovial a little bit, anything I can to connect with people. And when I'm saying jokes, I'm just saying, like, I don't tell, or maybe sometimes I do, but I don't tell it like a joke, but it might be just trying to keep people lighthearted, anything I can to connect with people. So yeah. Asking questions, this is how you create connection and likability, and that's all it is. We're all talking the same thing. It's all about a structure, but likability and connection comes from asking questions, being jovial or likable, being childlike. So I draw, that's a part of, you know, draw pictures, not like cartoons and things, like draw timelines, and I explain things by what I'm saying visually, so I can leave it with them. So those things like that, and just keeping eye contact. And I think what happens whenever someone's listening to this, you win the listing never by that much. It's always just by that much. Even when you've been in the industry for close to 19 years and you might have wonderful market share in a suburb, which I do in Surry Hills, I've got really, really good market share individually as an agent, that doesn't guarantee you nothing. And you could win the listing just still by that much each time. It's amazing. You do have to scrap. And I believe I'm the king of scrappers sometimes, because my numbers look awesome, but they're scrapped. They're scrapped every time, Samantha. I'm scrapping. Not all the time, but mostly, you know, you've got to work hard to get the work. But the two things I love most about the job, without question, is listing the property and auctioneering.
If I was teetering on the brink of, Tim, I really like you a lot. You know, we're considering you and this other guy down the road. He's slightly cheaper, kind of like you a bit more, but it's all about the dollar at the moment. What would you say to me?
Well, so if it's about commission or it's about advertising, you may need to make a business decision. So that's one thing. I often ask the question, so if all things were equal, would you pick me? Would you feel most comfortable to move forward with me? That provides a closing opportunity. And then from there, you would say, look, what fee structure did you have in mind? Because what you think you're hearing may not be necessarily what's in there. If I asked you the question, for example, what is marketing? I'd get, I reckon, 10 different answers from 10 different people. What's marketing? Some people might say, oh, marketing is advertising. Marketing is how you get buyers in the door. Marketing is the internet. People say different things about, and you can't pretend you know what people are thinking inside. So it might be they're testing you. So by asking the question, so Samantha, if all things being equal, would I be right to say you feel more comfortable with me than the other agent?
I definitely think your jokes are better.
Well, in that case, if we can agree on the commission, would you feel comfortable we can move forward right now?
Yep, I definitely would. I would say yes to you.
Can I say, when you do that, and if you're listening right now and watching, and you can replay this, the little head nod when you ask the question, the little head nod goes with the close. So do you feel comfortable to move ahead with me now?
That's that mirroring thing, because that's that chimpanzee thing where you start mirroring the person opposite you.
It's very hard to say no to that. Yeah. And if you're sincere and you say, you look the person in the eye and you ask it, so have I done enough to earn your business?
We're all nodding again now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the little head nod, you'll be amazed at that little bit of body language. And body language lets it all down in auctioneering. It lets it all down in the living room. There's little bits of telltales there in the living room, like body language. So, like, I'm sitting in my chair right now. If you have your hands, I'm going to try and push my hands down here. If you see someone with their hands, like, on the side of the chair like that, if you can sort of see, if they've got their hands to their side, they're sitting like that and they're leaning forward, they're like that. That body language is called the rocket ship. That rocket ship means stop talking. You're done. There's nothing else. They might be, it may not be you're not getting the listing. You have to stop. If someone's doing the rocket ship, like they're ready to go, they're not stretching. They're doing that because they want to go. They're ready to go. Stop. Yeah. Whatever you're doing, because they might have the other agent in. They've got to pick up the kids. Oh, my God, I've got to turn the roast. Why won't he leave? I've had enough of him. Just stop. Stop what you're doing. You got to understand that body language. And just because people do this, that's uncomfortable. That's not comfortable. So let's talk about the commission. Really, we're going to talk about the commission. They're not very comfortable about this. We don't have to talk about it right now. You got to pick up on these things. Or if someone's, if they're doing this, that's thinking. And if they're doing this or they're doing this, it's generally a little, and I'm not saying they're lying, but it's not exactly the truth. So if I said to you, how did you sleep last night? Oh, I didn't get a wink of sleep. I didn't sleep at all. Well, that's a load of rubbish. You did sleep somewhat. Okay. So you had a bad night's sleep. So yeah. That's true, but you did get some part of sleeping. And I tell you what, Samantha, women are brilliant liars than men. Men are terrible. They're hanging on their ear like this. You know, they're pulling all that. I thought their whole nose is going to come off. Women, they just very delicately touch things. You've got to be careful. No, you're the only agent in. Oh, my God. Did you see that? Yeah. Why not? They may not. They may have only got you in, but they're thinking about getting another one in. But look, before you actually get anyone else in, and this is a great question, by the way, if you're on the phone and ask all the questions and you can say, look, just curious, before I hang up, now I know I'm catching up with you on Thursday at 10 a.m. in the morning. I'm just curious, are you meeting up with any other agents? And just say, no.
No.
And say, look, but I am thinking about getting another one in.
But I am thinking about getting another one in.
Before you do that, how about we meet up first and then if you're not comfortable, if you need to get a second opinion after that, by all means.
I'm nodding again. Yeah, I think you've got me. Where's the agency agreement? I'll sign now.
Yeah. So, look, there's lots of little things that I can share. It's hard sometimes out of context, but the fact that you're willing to ask these questions in a genuine and sincere manner comes across. The intentions are all that matters.
The magazine might be out by the time we release this podcast, but Travis Williams from Box and Dice has done a cracking interview and there's a big spread of you in the magazine with some of your tips for listing in a tight market. Can you just give us a little preview of that?
Number one, try and get in as many doors as possible and all the different avenues you can. So cast your net long and wide. Rather have one right in the water, put the net in and grab everyone. That's what I say. So try and get as many opportunities as you can. And, hey, I've listed, 19 properties this month so far, but I've lost some. So that's part of the business, unfortunately. And you don't get them all. You can't get every kick in the footy field. What I would say to anyone that's watching is it doesn't matter what you text. The fact that you text is great. I text after. May not necessarily be right after. Could be the next day at a time that I feel like it's appropriate. I chase the business. If I can't close it down and I ask the question to close it, and I ask for all the time if I've done enough to earn the business, I always ask. I asked last night, there's this lady, Denise. I think she really genuinely does feel comfortable. She had her like advisor there and I asked like two or three times in different ways without being super pushy. But they weren't quite ready. So I sent her a text this morning and it was a level of commitment that I'm committed to and I am. And I really genuinely, sincerely want that business. So it's in my mind rather than it's a bit of paperwork and I'll just leave it somewhere and poor old Denise and may or may not get it. She's in my head. Like I really want that job. So I'm really, my energy is towards Denise. Because I really believe I'm the right person to be able to help her through that process. Other things that I can give in terms of tips is to be on time. So Denise said to me, gee, you're on time. I thought, gee, is that a shock or something? It was ridiculous, you know, but try. And she said, oh, some agent that I'm not going to use, she said, oh, she had four or five agents in. They look half asleep. I thought, oh, well, you know, where's the energy? You know, you have to have the right energy when you're going in. And can I say, if you are struggling because you might have done two or three appraisals and some buyer appointments as an agent and you could be at 6:30 at night, which it was with Denise last night, and by the time I left the home, it was well after 7, and you might think that's not too late. It's normal, which I think it is, but you have to have the right energy. So sometimes energy can be manufactured within by either doing some things like some really great cool music in the car on your way there, having a thought process on the conversation ahead of time. So for this particular property, I had some sales in the suburb that I've either currently got listed or have sold that's something that's going to be worthwhile talking about in the conversation. So I'm thinking about it. And also sales of properties that I've sold and also currently on the market in the neighbouring suburbs. So they're in my mind before I'm going into the presentation. I get there, I think about where I want the board to go. So I've got I've actually got the listing and where I'm going to place the actual board.
So you're visualising success.
I'm visualising, yep.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds all little silly things, but it means a lot to me. I take a few breaths. So what could happen if I'm feeling a little bit too pumped up, which sometimes I am, then I would take some slow breaths in to calm myself so I'm nice and neutral. My energy is level. So it could be and I'll do like probably three or four of those nice big breaths. On the other side, if my energy is a bit low, and I've got to be honest with you, around 3:30 in the day, I'd say probably between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m., I go in a bit of a lull patch.
Yeah.
No matter what I eat or drink, I just my energy goes down a little bit. So I tend to do short breaths, breathing in as much as I can with my nose and quickly out with my mouth. So you can do this just so I can show people what I do. So and you know what? Your brain fills up with oxygen. Baby, we're ready to go. Let's go get them.
I'm going to try that in private. I am going to try that.
You know, you feel great and you don't need any chocolate or coffee or something. Just for breathing. Like it's just natural and that can just get you going.
A couple of pieces of last advice, because you are the main in-house trainer at Fletcher's and we've just seen some of your absolute brilliance there and there's some great tips there for listeners. Is there anything you're reading or listening to or anything like that at the moment that you could recommend?
Yeah, I do listen to podcasts. I quite like to read. So there's some books that I've read during the lockdown. I brought some along. Some of these are pretty old and I don't know if they're really worth
Think and Grow Rich, yep, another classic, yep.
I've read a few Chris Helder books. I think the one, Useful Beliefs, is very good and someone that's been in the industry a long time, Rick Rushton, Power Connection. And also I've got an 18-year-old son doing year 12 and a nearly 17-year-old next week, our daughter doing year 11. And during the lockdown she also was read Chris Helder's book and Rick Rushton, and because I know these guys, she reached out to them on Instagram and thanked them for reading the book and everything like that, which is quite touching, I reckon, for them. But also for my daughter, and it's great as a dad that you've actually loved the book so much that you've been able to influence your daughter in terms of, you know, her own little personal development and way that she might be able to improve herself. So I think books is a wonderful avenue where you can learn and create an opportunity in your mind to expand, because once the mind expands, it never retracts.
That is really good advice. So, Tim, I just want to thank you for spending some time with us this morning. It's been amazing to listen to some of your listing advice and well, all sorts of advice, really, from lockdown to auctions to everything else. If there was one thing that you'd like people to remember or one thing that you'd like to leave everyone with, what would it be?
Again, just those three principles of mine, just to treat people with kindness, respect and professionalism. And I think that'll be the one thing that I'll continue to work on. I don't always get it right. You know, sometimes I'm a grouch or I don't get it all right. I'm not perfect. But and surround yourself with people that will lift you up, not pull you down. And the ones that are pulling you down, don't listen to them. Just be mindful of that. Listen to people that are going to push you in the right direction, which is up, not down.
Yeah, great advice. Tim Heaviside, thank you so much.
Thanks, Samantha.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts. Visit eliteagentelevate.com.